Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Now, International Women's Day took place yesterday, March 8th. This year's focus was on promoting gender equality under the theme Accelerating Action. One gender disparity is within healthcare. Women's health is underfunded, under-researched and often misdiagnosed. Dr. Louise Fitzgerald is a GP and an activist for women's healthcare. And Louise joins me on the line now. Louise, you're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
Louise, when did you begin to realise that there was a disparity within women's healthcare?
I think really that probably goes back to the story I told at the National Women's Council event yesterday was all focusing on menopause and both my personal and professional experiences of menopause. But that story goes back to when my mum went through menopause when I was a teenager, and she really struggled to get the help that she needed at that stage in terms of getting advice from GPs and getting the right treatment for that, because at that stage, HRT was something we weren't prescribing. And she felt quite powerless because she couldn't get the help that she needed. But I felt quite powerless because I was a teenager at that stage, but knew I wanted to be a doctor, but couldn't help her. And I knew then at that stage that when I was a doctor, I wanted to help women as much as I could. But fast forward to becoming a GP, and really menopause is talked about now, but, you know, 10 years ago, even 6 years ago, we weren't talking about menopause in the way that we were. And certainly now I'm able to help women with menopause and perimenopause and getting help. But it's very much a disparity in terms of who can access that menopause care. So as you said, I do a lot of work around raising awareness in terms of women's health. And I do a lot of talks, especially to marginalized groups, about accessing menopause care. So I think there really is, it's still very difficult for women to access menopause care and health, general health care. And sometimes when they go talk to a GP, they find that GPs don't want to talk to them about certain topics. And so a lot of the work I do is focusing on giving women their voice, telling them what resources to bring with them, and what information to bring with them to their GP to be listened. Because there are lots of resources available, but social media is a great thing in some ways, but it does have a lot of varying information on it. But there are some very robust resources available to women that are not for healthcare professionals. They're actually for the women themselves. And if you're information and education is empowerment, so having that information means then you can access healthcare.
And can we go back to your mom's story for a moment? Her experience with the menopause led to her leaving the workforce. And, you know, it's hard to know exactly how things would have played out. But had she got the necessary healthcare at the time, that might not necessarily have happened. And I know that's happening for so many women. So many women leave the workforce. And when it comes down to it, quite often it was due to symptoms of menopause.
Absolutely. So she was a dietitian, so really well qualified, working, you know, in a hospital setting or healthcare setting. And the main symptom she had really was hot flushes and anxiety. So she'd stopped driving places that she felt she used to be able to drive to. And there is some evidence, and it was some evidence, that soya milk can help with hot flushes. So she was drinking gallons and gallons of soya milk. And the soya milk can work for some people, but it doesn't work for other people. So sort of the initial trial of her soy milk hadn't worked, it should have been stopped at that stage. But unfortunately, she couldn't get HRT, so her symptoms just got worse, and then she gave up the employment. Now, she subsequently got HRT and did really well with that. But at that stage, you know, she sort of made that decision, so she didn't go back to employment. But this is something I feel very strongly about. I do a lot of work on occupational health, so work-related health, and how health impacts your work. And I've been invited to the House of Commons for the 18th of March to discuss menopause in the workplace in the UK, and looking at policy on menopause in the workplace in the UK. And the UK is probably a little bit more ahead of Ireland in terms of looking at menopause in the workplace and how menopause can impact women in terms of, you know, working and their ability to work, but also their, you know, staying in the workplace. I think Ireland is looking at that, and we certainly have, you know, there's private companies looking at doing courses within institutions and businesses as to how you can accommodate women with menopause. You know, there are policies within the HSE and certain hospitals certainly have policies. but we're probably a little bit behind in that compared to the UK. But this is something, it's not, you know, I think a lot of women say to me, I feel like I'm going crazy, or, you know, the person looked at me like I was going crazy. It's this, they think it's all in my head, but it's not. And it's certainly not. These are physical symptoms. They are psychological symptoms. It's a whole combination of symptoms that affects women and then unfortunately can impact them in work.
At the opposite end of the scale, if you will, I was at a fertility event last weekend, and there was talk at it about the secrecy and the silence around fertility journeys and the reticence that women feel to say, I am on a fertility journey, and women returning to work after really bad news, really big procedures. And I think this plays out again when it comes to perimenopause and menopause. Women don't want to put their hand up and say, me and my partner are trying for a baby, I'm pregnant, I'm on a fertility journey, I might be having perimenopause, because it's thought that it'll look like we're not fully committed to our jobs. And I think we need to change that conversation a lot.
Absolutely, absolutely. I was at a menopause talk last year, and there was a man speaking at it, and he was working in a company that does look at workplace programs to help employees around their health. But he was saying that the women need to speak first, that it has to be the women saying that they're going through menopause, that they're going through perimenopause, that they're struggling. And I think, and maybe he just couldn't quite relate to where you'd be coming from as a woman, but, and having had some health issues myself, and actually now being very much in the perimenopause myself, I think it's very hard as a woman to be the person to say it first. I think really it's about, you know, you don't have to use those words as such. If you're happy to use them, then that's great. But for some people, just be able to say, I'm having a difficult time. I think that's really important. But I think we shouldn't be labeling the woman or the female as the person that has to say it first. It has to be more of a change within the business that and the company, that, you know, that people can feel that they can say maybe what their symptoms are, or say what they're experiencing, but not have to use the specific words and not be the one that says it first. And I do actually see women more now coming forward. So occupational health is maybe someone's on sick leave and you review them to see if they fit to go back to work. But now I'm actually getting referred people with menopause who are looking for adjustments in work to help with their menopause. And that's really good to see that, because people should be able to come forward and say, I need some help. But a lot of the time they haven't said why they need the help, and they're coming to see me, their company's referred them on. And we don't always have to say back to the company what the person is experiencing. So we don't always say that they're having menopausal symptoms, but we say what adjustments can help. So I think the expectation that, you know, it's great if women do feel like they can say either what they're experiencing, but the expectation shouldn't be there that it has to come from the employee, it has to come from the woman. It should be the company trying to make it a place where the person feels comfortable, regardless of whether what they want to say what it is or not.
Yeah. And then that is the policy led piece, and how important that is, that if you work for a company that has a policy around fertility, around menopause, that's somewhere where you feel comfortable then accessing that and speaking up about that. You know, people have to share what they're comfortable sharing, but that sends out a very important message. Can we talk a little bit then also about seeking help and that self-advocacy piece? Because there is also messaging that needs to change about women just struggling on. If we look at something like endometriosis, for example, the average wait time for diagnosis is 9 years. And a lot of that is attributed to the idea that women just live with painful periods, and that is just a part of female life. And it shouldn't be looked on that way. It should be a symptom that is investigated. What's your advice on self-advocacy for women?
So I think one thing is the discussion around health topics. So I think menopause, it's absolutely brilliant. We see so much more about menopause now. And fertility, I think, is beginning to be more of a discussion. I definitely have more people coming to talk to me about fertility. But there's still topics. Endometriosis is definitely a topic we don't talk about enough. And I think when we're not talking about topics, that's when people don't find their voice. They don't come forward to say how they're, what they think they're experiencing. And especially, you know, just even coming to see a GP, which, you know, you should be able to come to your GP and say exactly how you feel, what you think it is, you know, whatever comes into your head. But I know that that can be really hard for people. And I hear that in my talks that I give a lot, that someone's gone to their GP and they feel they've been shut down. So, you know, us having conversations and getting things into the main domain and getting them into social media as well can help with people, because it can help them find their voice and feel, well, actually, the strength of numbers, there's other people experiencing this. So I think that's really important. But then also people having the tools to go to a healthcare professional and say, I think this is what it is because of all these symptoms, or I have this. So at my talks, I give women the menopause symptom questionnaire, which is just a very simple questionnaire with all the symptoms you can have in menopause. And you take yes or no, mild, moderate, severe. And I've had women, they've said to me, I've tried to talk to my GP about menopause, and they feel it's not the menopause, maybe based on my age. And we know for menopause, age is but a number. So I say to them, okay, well, fill this out and bring it back to your GP and say, look, you know, this is what I think it is. And then same with endometriosis. You know, if you can write down your symptoms and say, look, I have all these symptoms, I really do feel that they add up and it could be endometriosis. It's much harder to be sort of turned away when you have that information. And that's why I say information is empowerment, because it empowers you to find your voice and go to a healthcare professional and say, this is what I think it is. But I do think the sort of menopause revolution that's gone on, although, you know, there's certain factors I don't like about it in terms of it's becoming a little bit money-making in some places, it has helped really with women finding their voice and coming forward. There's things specifically around menopause which I think we don't talk enough about, like urinary incontinence, that's a huge one, and sort of development of prolapses during menopause. And I think that's something we're beginning to talk about a little bit more. But I do think, you know, bringing up topics and making them, as you're doing, mainstream, then people are willing to talk about them. Because we happily go into the GP and talk about cholesterol and blood pressure. And okay, it's not as maybe intimate, but it's because we hear about them on a daily basis.
Yeah, and we consider them to be a health issue. I often give the advice that you need to find a GP that you trust and that you feel you are listened to with. But I often get emails and messages online from people, particularly around the country, saying that's not an option. And particularly to access a female GP isn't an option. So we have a way to go with that, don't we?
Definitely. And I hear that from my talks, and I run a menopause service in Grafton Medical where I'm a GP, and you don't have to be a patient of the practice, you can come in as an external patient. And a good few of the patients have gone through two or three GPs before they've got to me, and sometimes come in as really upsetting, but they can be really upset because they found that they've just been told it's not menopause, you know, it's been put on an antidepressant, and it doesn't mean it is always menopause, but it's definitely being heard makes such a big difference to people. So I definitely see that. And, you know, would never want to diss GP colleagues, but I do think, you know, GPs have an interest in different things. So sometimes it's, unfortunately, it is trying to find a GP that has an interest in the health topic that you have. And it is about educating ourselves as well. And I understand that there's certain parts of the country where the local GP maybe doesn't know, you know, that's not a special interest of theirs, that's not a topic they're interested in. I mean, menopause is a natural cycle, part of our cycle. It should be something we're all interested in, but it seems to be that there are areas that, you know, different GPs are interested in. So I suppose if you have the option to travel somewhere else and meet a different GP, that sometimes has to be the option.
But as you say, don't be afraid to keep gathering information, be it online or keeping a track of your symptoms, and just keep pushing. We all know our own bodies. You're an expert on your own body. Nobody can really tell you what is pain to you or what isn't. If you're not getting the answers that you want, then keep asking, even if going to a different GP is not necessarily an option. Can I ask you finally, seeing as you are so menopause focused, we are indeed talking about menopause a lot more now, but there is still an issue with access to HRT. It's still not free, although that was promised at the last election, and there still is a huge shortage of HRT. Where are we with that, although it is not your responsibility to fix these things?
I mean, patch shortages are a huge problem. And the patches we're getting instead of the patches we like are not great. So that's still a huge problem. The free HRT will be great when it comes in. And obviously, there's been so much talk about that. There are other options. So there are gels and sprays. And actually, my preferred option is the spray. So I think the thing is, there's shortages. The gel and spray, there's no shortage at the moment. So if you are finding it difficult with the patch, that you can't get the patch, or it's not absorbing because the patches aren't as good as as the original one, so they're not working quite as well, then just, you know, go back to your initial prescriber and just ask them to switch to something different. Obviously, it's not ideal to be switching around, but the two other options, the gel and the spray, are actually really good options. So there's, you know, don't be left without your HRT. Go back to whoever's your provider. I get women just to email me and just say, I can't get my patch, and I switch them over. There's no big palaver of you know, needing to come in and see me, really. I can switch them over by email, because the dosing is the same. It's the same medication at the end of the day. It's just a different formulation.
Yeah, but I mean, so, like we said, with the policy-led care, it sends out a message. And I think not having free HRT for 2025, as was promised, and having a shortage of patches also sends out a message which feeds into the disparity, which is why we started this conversation in the first place. But Louise, you're out there fighting the good fight. People can get themselves informed and armed with information at your website, informed.ie. You're at Grafton Medical in Dublin, and you also host the Lady Bites podcast with the Irish Heart Foundation. Dr. Louise Fitzgerald, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.